Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Caligula's Horse is an Australian progressive metal band from Brisbane, Queensland. The band was formed by Sam Vallon and Jim Gray in early 2011. The current lineup consists of lead vocalist Jim Gray, lead guitarist Sam Vallon, bassist Dale Prince, and drummer Josh Griffin. The band is known for their dynamic soaring soundscapes, heavy melodic intricacy, and huge live sounds. Caligula's Horse has taken ambitious strides with every release, maintaining a course of continual artistic development and reinvention. The band garnered critical acclaim for their eclectic and exploratory debut, Moments from Ephemeral City, in 2011, and its dark conceptual follow-up, The Tide, The Thief, and River's End, in 2013. But Caligula's Horse truly made their mark worldwide with their vibrant and hard-hitting third album, Bloom, in 2015, the first on prestigious German record label Inside Out. It was on the back of this record that the group expanded its touring regime beyond Australia. The band's fourth album, In Contact, released in 2017, with its grand concept and expansive dynamics, saw the band grow its reach tremendously, packing out venues across Australia, the UK, Europe, and touring the Americas for the first time. In 2020, the band released Rise Radiant, an uncompromising exploration of the human experience, dressed in vivid musical color and virtuosic performances. With the release of Rise Radiant, the band celebrated their highest international chart positions yet. In January 2024, the band released their sixth studio album, Charcoal Grace. Born of the static hopelessness that the pandemic forced upon the band and indeed much of the world, Charcoal Grace is an album reckoning with the experiences and outcomes of this time, geared ultimately towards catharsis, moving towards a more hopeful future. Up next on Celebsvant, we've got Jim Gray from Caligula's Horse. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am in the fair city of Brisbane in Australia, which is a wonderful place. And I'm entirely biased towards it on account of growing up here and having a family here. And if you say that Sydney's better than Brisbane, I will physically do you some harm. I will come at you like a buzzard. I will do... It's fine. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Okay, thanks. I'm great. Thank you. I've as yet to come visit Australia. It is on my list. So I can't comment about better or worse versus two. But I still think Johannesburg's the best out of all of them.
Oh, you reckon? All right, there you go.
But that's
well, I look forward to being there, and I'll see if you're right. You can prove it.
Oh, is your first time coming through shortly?
Yeah, legit. We're like never been there as a person, never been there as a band, so it's going to be totally new territory for us.
Oh, lovely. So I'm looking forward to hearing your perceptions. I know there's reputations around the city and the country, but throw those out before you come in and just let your open mind be present to what's happening around you. Because I know a lot of people are like, you can't do this, you can't go there. And it was like, no, you can, and you will. So there's it.
Well, we'll see how we go. A bunch of Aussie idiots just like strolling around. We'll see what happens.
Okay. So the name Caligula Horse, what does it mean? Where does it come from?
Right. Caligula's Horse, there's kind of this story, probably pseudo-historical, kind of apocryphal story, where the Emperor Caligula made his horse Incitatus a consul in order to basically to say fuck you to the Senate, which is a strong move. It probably didn't happen. But it's one of those things where they were trying to paint him in a negative light and whatever. But it's fine. He was a party boy. He was a loose unit. But the reason we picked it is partly because like using Caligula's Horse as kind of like an idiom is a way to say like, hey, I'm a fish out of water, or like I got no idea what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm up here. And so that just gets more and more appropriate for the band and life as time goes on. So it turns out it was appropriate. But interestingly, it was actually going to be the title of the first album when it was just going to be Sam, our guitarist's solo album. And then Yeah, when we started working together and decided to form a band around it, things changed and we called the band Caligula's Horse.
Okay, so now let's rewind a little bit further before that. So at what age, as whether it was a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in the music creative world, creating space. And from that point to how did you meet the band? So your journey and then the band's journey.
What's really interesting is there's like a bunch of different answers to that question. Because I, as a kid, like from the age of five onwards, did ballet. Like I danced. Okay. And I sang in, I got a scholarship to quite a prestigious school, which my parents could not afford to send me to, through a church choir that I had to sing in. And so I was dancing and singing. And then eventually through school, I was also acting. I was doing theater and things like that through school. So I always had this kind of bug, this natural tendency to want to kind of express things artistically. Because I'm quite emotionally soft and kind of, you know, like a sensitive person. And so that sort of came out of me naturally over time. And it wasn't until I was kind of a teenager and discovering metal and bands and stuff like that. Like, you know, I remember listening to, I think the best example, and I've said it before, but the best example is probably watching the film clip for Chop Suey by System of a Down. I remember being like 14 or something, and that song just hit me like a train. I saw the clip and I went like, holy shit! Oh my God! And so I just like, I wanted to form a high school band and do that whole thing. Yeah. So at that point, that was where things turned, and I kind of went like, oh yeah, I'll form this band. And we played a couple of really bad gigs at school, at dances and stuff, forcing ourselves onto that stage when no one really wanted us there. And I remember it being like fundamentally life-changing, those moments, and being able to go like, cool, I love this. I want to do this. And then, yeah, never look back basically. And then I started studying classical voice and jazz voice at university. At a conservatorium of music. And through that and the surrounding people, I kind of met the guys from my very first band, which was Arcane, back in the day. And we released a few albums. We were around for about 11 years. And there was some crossover while Caligula's Horse was active. And through them, at the same kind of rehearsal space that we were rehearsing in, I met Sam, our guitarist, for the first time. And so, yeah, there was this just one thing after another little conflagration of events that led to me basically meeting Sam and hanging out with him and him asking me to come and be a guest vocalist on his solo album. And so I came and recorded one track and we both went, well, that was fun. Do you want to do the rest? I'm like, yeah. And I was like, cool. Do you want to collaborate on a song? I'm like, hell yeah. And then, it, you know, it went well. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of like a stretched out answer, but, yeah, there was a lot from start to finish there.
Quick question. When you guys are performing, do you ever do ballet on the stage?
No, okay. Maybe look, the answer is no, but there might be little hints of yes. Because I tend to be quite, I suppose, effeminate in some of my hand movements. And yes, a lot of them are to do with just habits that I've developed around singing certain things and what my hands are just doing.
Yeah.
But I also kind of express physically with my hands in a way that a dancer might.
Okay.
No, it's not strictly ballet, no, as fun as that might look.
The band's been going for, since the first album, 2011, going for a number of years. And you were in the previous band for also 11 years, as you mentioned. It's been a number of years being in two different bands. You specifically, I know you said it's your love and your passion, but beyond that, what is the thing that like keeps going, okay, let's do another record, let's keep creating, let's keep going on that stage?
That's a really interesting question. I think that for me, it's literally unavoidable. I like, the way that I put it is that like artists have something to say. That's like the kind of core element of an artist. No, like no matter what the medium is or whatever else, it's really just a fundamental, I have this thing in me that I need to expel one way or another, either like I have this idea for a story or I have these sounds in my head that need to be put into the world. And I always find that really fascinating. Like I love thinking about that, like as a species, like we are, you know, we're so smart that we learn to communicate through language, right? You know, we needed to be heard so desperately that we invented a way to communicate. Like it's so awesome. And so like, I feel like that is tied in with, like my approach and how I keep going is because it's just like this thing is in me and I'm not good for much else. You know what I mean? Like I'm pretty subpar at a lot of things, but I'm pretty excellent at this. So
okay,
I'm gonna stay to the course.
I like that. Okay, so you reference this about communication and ways of communication. So I'm not sure if you are aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way so this is the way people process. So a small part of it, or a small element or subtopic within NLP, is the way people process information. Now, each of us have a dominant, secondary, and tertiary. What that means is you're dominant, you'll be in it for majority of the day. Your second, you may be in for a couple of hours, and your tertiary may be half an hour, if at all. But it'll be in specific environments, so to speak, that they switch over. Now, you've got your visual people. Now, they, when they receive or process information, they create pictures of what they're hearing. You've got auditory people. Now, auditory people hear the words. They understand the words. They put the words into sentences. They hear the sentences. So it's all about the actual thing that's being communicated. Then you've got kinesthetic people. Now, kinesthetic people, it's about the energy, the tone of voice, the body language, and all those different elements that are linked to those type of things. Now, I'm focusing specifically on music because it might be different to the rest of your day experience. But when you listen to music of your own or by other artists, are you creating pictures? Are you hearing the words, or is it about the emotion and the feeling of the song?
It's very much the emotion and the feeling. Like I love this story because when I was a kid, I remember listening to music that my dad had on record, and just spinning it and listening. And like, I have these moments of like, why am I crying? Like, why am I crying? Why am I getting goosebumps right now? Like, why is this total? And I have been seeking that same feeling. That is one, I talk about this all the time. This is one of the most important things for me in music, is I want to be able to feel completely overwhelmed with what you've created. And whether that means I'm listening to something that is like oblique and heavy and really challenging to listen to, or whether it's something that is truly simple and bare bones and emotional, it depends on the mood, I guess. But really, it's about that sensation. The other part is that I definitely do listen to the words. I don't really picture things in my head. I've always joked that I'm kind of blind in my head. Like I don't really see images and things like that in that way. But the lyrics and the poetry are really important to me. But it's mostly to do with the way that they make you feel. So again, it's like the lyric is the story, but it's also the way that it trips off the tongue. Like what is the rhythm doing? What is the, you know, what is the pulse of this doing? Why is this so powerful? Like it has to be powerful. That's my whole thing.
So it sounds like you're dominant. Well, in the music sense, and it might overlap, it sounds like you're dominant kinesthetic, secondary auditory, and tertiary visual. Because now you understand why you don't see pictures, because you don't process information in that way. So now I've given you a little bit of explanation.
This is great. How much do I owe you for the lesson?
nothing. So now tell me, when you're listening to songs by other artists, and it may be genre specific, which I've noticed from other artists I've spoken to, but when you're listening to those songs, are you able just to relax and enjoy, or is your creative technical brain unpacking what you're listening to?
I can kind of switch it off. I mean, because again, I'm seeking that total, that emotional overload. So, you know, if I just let myself absorb it and kind of get taken for the ride by it, it's easier to do that. But I don't have a strictly analytical mind, really. I do everything intuitively, like naturally. That's how generally how my brain likes to function, which means that I can kind of do both at the same time. Like I can be sitting there and appreciating what somebody's doing, at the same time as going like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. But I just know why, rather than sitting there going like, ah, yes, well, of course, because that's this chord followed by that chord kind of thing. Like I can't think that way.
Okay.
I mean, no discredit for people that can, because obviously that's fucking amazing. But like, for me, it's just like, I can't.
Okay. So you referenced listen to your dad's record players. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, I love the tactile aesthetic of holding something. I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklet, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, you might or might not be, but CDs, cassettes, even cassettes, can you believe, and vinyls are on a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK had 5.9 million sales, the biggest since 1990. In the UK as well, they've got this basket of goods that they used to gauge the income tax on. And vinyls have been in that basket for the longest time. And now, because of the upsurge of CDs are back in that basket to help them deal with the uptick or check the income tax rates. But then we've also got these digital platforms that people consume music on. Your observations and perceptions of what's happening in the landscape.
That's really interesting to hear. And I think it's probably reflective of a couple of things. And firstly, I think, and again, correct me, like, come back and if you're listening to this like ages from now, find me and beat me up if I'm wrong. But like I feel like virality and things like that are becoming less and less important. I genuinely do. Mm. You know, like I stream on Twitch. I do, you know, gaming streams, music streams, that kind of stuff. And when I was getting started doing that, I did a bunch of research into, you know, who does what and what where. And I saw there was a little tutorial video that somebody put on YouTube and they said, like, I had a clip from my channel that went giga viral, like massively viral on TikTok, millions and millions of views, and his viewership and subscribership went up fractionally. That's it. So okay. It's like, that's an example. It's like, it's so easy for people to see something and like something and go, boom, that's that. But that's not a fan.
Yeah.
You know, that's not somebody who's going to like tattoo your lyrics on their body. That's not somebody who's going to come to every single show and buy the merch and, you know, do all of that. So I feel like gradually over time, it's becoming less and less important. And I think that that is also reflected in how people are listening to music on streaming services as well. Because gradually it'll start just feeding you the same boring thing over and over again. Because it's like, it knows what you like. It's going, here, you like that. Whereas like now people are kind of going like, no, I want to support artists. And I also want something a little bit different. So we're kind of seeing, I suppose, a turnaround from that. The reason I like vinyl is exactly how you describe CDs. Like, I'm not like an audiophile guy. I just like having the beautiful piece of art and, you know, being able to put it down. And it forces you also to listen to a whole album.
Yes.
You can't skip. And I love that because it means that when you're listening to albums that might have hits on them from another artist, you know, you finally realize that those hits are actually surrounded by other hidden bangers as well. It's like,
yeah.
Anyway, that's kind of a rambling answer, but yeah, it's a cool thing to take a note of, you know?
So I was living overseas. I came back to South Africa. And last year, near the end of the last year, I wanted to get myself a CD player. And everyone was like, you can't get CD players anymore. Where are you going to find a CD player? And in South Africa,
right, granddad.
So in South Africa, there's this platform sort of similar to Amazon, but different, called Takealot. And I went on thinking, okay, cool. I'm hoping that there'll be one good player. And I went on, they had hundreds of options that I had to narrow it down and narrow it down. And eventually I chose my choice. And when I received the CD player, so I've also got my digital subscription because I teach spinning classes. So I need to prep those on there. But when I listen to the exact same song from a digital subscription on the same system compared to listening to it on the CD on the same system, the sound quality on the CD, I feel like I'm at a stadium. And it's like got such an experience of over music flowing through my body. It's like amazing compared to the muted form of what's on the digital. And I think a lot of people who are only ever listening to digital never experience that.
Mm. Yeah. And it's like, honestly, for me, that a lot of that is stuff that falls on deaf ears. You know, it's like when people talk about the quality of vinyl or the quality of this, but certainly compared to the, you know, what you're getting on Spotify and et cetera, it's vastly, vastly improved. I have been saying this thing, actually, what's been interesting on tour, because we've been touring a hell of a lot this year. Like, we did North America and Canada and Australia and Europe and now New Zealand next week, South Africa after that, Scandinavia. It's a big freaking year. And one of the things that I've been saying to people on stage is reminding them that it's super important to support artists in that way. And one of the best ways that they can do it is to do exactly what they've done and come to a show and buy merch there. You know, so it's like, yeah, you might want the CD, you might want the vinyl, but if you come to the show, you buy it there. Cause like that is direct support. That is one of the ways that it keeps bands on the road. And particularly now, cause a lot of people aren't aware that it's like post COVID, man, like touring has gotten way more expensive. Like just basically for everything. And in a lot of areas, the fees that people are offering have gone down because everyone's kind of in the shit. So it's like, we're all trying to kind of be on this little tightrope right now, trying to make it all work. So I'm glad that people are purchasing physical copies. I hope that they do them at shows as well.
So tell us the band's creative process. In creating a song from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes, is it all of you together writing, collaborating with you and Sam? What is that? Or is it different every time?
No, we have a pretty strict system. I mean, like, strict is probably the wrong word. We're well oiled as a machine now. So it's really, really efficient. So Sam and I have always been the primary songwriters for the band from the beginning, and we've had a number of lineup changes. Right now, we have Dale Princey and Josh Griffin on the drums, and I can't see that changing ever again because they're freaking awesome. And they have been part of the writing process for our most recent album, Charcoal Grace, as well. But yeah, usually what we do is we operate with kind of like a composed structure rather than a we get together in a room and jam stuff out structure. That never really happens for us. So these ideas come from primarily Sam instrumentally, where he will spark something and he will flesh out an idea that's really kind of embryonic and send it to me. And I'll hear it and I'll start, you know, brainstorming ideas, or I'll write a little vocal shape over it, or we start discussing where we want it to go. And then we have this kind of like online back and forth, sending ideas back and forth until we kind of really like the fire starts coming out of that smoke and we start going, yes, okay, cool. And then it, you know, momentum from there. And it's worked really well for us over the years because it means that like we have more than one voice. You know, the minute you lose your objectivity, because it will happen, like when you're writing and you're sitting down for hours and writing something all day, yep, and then at the end of the day you're listening back going like, I have no idea if this is good. I have no idea. I have this, there's one of our kind of classic songs that is a fan favorite. It's a song called Graves from the end of In Contact, which is an album from 2017, big concept album thing. And the outro riff is kind of this iconic Caligula's horse moment. And I remember Sam, after a whole day of working on stuff, just sending me this thing as a throwaway, just going like, hey man, look, I've lost my objectivity. I don't know if it's good. Let me know if you think it's trash. Send. And it was that riff. And I've gone, dude, it's one of the best things you've ever written. This is so sick. So, yeah. So you see what I mean, where it's like, you know, it's good to have another voice, another person to kind of hear what you've been working on and to kind of bounce off. So yeah, it's been awesome developing that over the last 11 years.
And performing live, what do you enjoy about that?
The attention. It's the connection, really. Like I enjoy the energy, and I know that in terms of my sort of self and my character, that's when I'm at my best, is when I'm on stage. It's like people say, it's like a cliche, I guess, but it really is where I belong. You know, like if I get up on stage, that's where I feel the most comfortable, the most myself. And we create quite an energetic show. Like it's quite a physical show. We encourage people to mosh and jump and sing and shout with us and do the whole thing. Like there's a real back and forth there. And that energy and interaction really kind of drives my enjoyment of touring, because otherwise it's a pretty exhausting and laborious thing to do. So, but that's very rewarding. And I feel like right now as a band, we are tighter as a group of musicians and also tighter as a group of friends than we ever have been. So yeah, it's a good time, man.
Okay, so I'm not sure if it's the same sort of in a mosh sort of type of jumping crowd, but because I'm not sure if it's relevant, so let me know if I'm this question. So I'm normally that guy that's right in front. I'll enjoy the show. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two videos, one or two photos, and I'll put it to the left. But I noticed that a lot of other type of shows, you'll have these people have their cell phones out for like 80% of the time, 90% of the time, filming, tweeting, posting, doing whatever they do at that time. So a person, and you can correct me if I'm incorrect on this conversation, but as a person observing a bunch of phones on the stage, do you not feel that takes away from the connection and energy you're referencing, or it's just where society is at the moment?
It really depends. Like, because I'm with you on some of it. I remember it really depends on the volume and the, like, how long it goes on for, exactly that. Because I remember actually noting it in one of our shows in Latin America. It was funny because it was actually distinctly different from the other places we went to where no one had their phones out. Everyone was just there with us and doing the thing. But everyone did for a really long time. And for a while there was a moment where I looked out over the crowd and kind of went like, I'm really just performing for phones right now. I'm actually just performing straight into cameras and that's it. And I didn't enjoy that moment, but it's really a cultural difference everywhere. Like some places in Europe, there were more phones out. Some people were exactly like you where they're, oh, their favorite bit's coming up. I'm just going to take this clip and we're done. And then that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people doing it more frequently in other places as well. It is something that you do get used to seeing though now, because not to put like it to, you know, break the fourth wall too much, but like, you know, it is good for promotion if people are sharing stuff about your band's live performance, so that's fine, you know, like I'm not concerned about that. But yeah, when it does get to like most of the people in the crowd filming most of the time, that's when it feels a bit kind of uncanny and strange.
So interesting. I saw Westlife was here in end of November last year,
Really?
and they were doing so. Obviously, I was sitting in the front, and obviously in the middle, in the front, there was this one guy who was literally on his phone the whole time, just tweeting and then texting or whatever he was doing. And Nikki from the band actually pulled him out and said, "Dude, why are you here? You've literally been texting and SMSing the whole show. You have not been with us the whole show. So what exactly are you doing here?" Something to that effect. And I felt it was good because it was like, you know, guys, yes, take your phones out, do what you need to do, but don't be there. You've paid this exorbitant amount of money to sit in the front, and yet you're just sitting on your cell phone the whole time. So I thought it was good to just, for the whole audience, to get that wake up call to be like, okay, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Let's just be with you and be in the moment. So I thought
Yeah,
that was
true.
good.
I think there's probably ways to do that. You know, it's like for me, like one of the things that I do as a front man is I love to talk a bunch of nonsense, and I like to, you know, like highly improvise, just kind of chat with the crowd. Like if people heckle, I actually quite enjoy it because it's sort of an opportunity to kind of have a funny moment and that sort of thing. So we try and keep it pretty lighthearted. You know, if somebody needs to be called out in that way, I feel like it'd be more fun to do it in kind of like a jovial, whimsical way.
Yes.
But that could just be the Australian kind of larrikin
I
character
mean,
that we all
he
have.
was jokingly about it. He wasn't like shouting, but he was like he'd
Fuck you,
laughing as he was
dude.
saying it. Yeah.
No, I get you.
So I love this game. I know if I had to ask this question in 2 minutes, 2 years, 20 years, 8 minutes, I know your answer would be different every time, simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs once we finish this conversation by other artists, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Only because it's the first thing that popped into my head, but I would probably press play on the song "Bear the Weight" by Exploring Birdsong, who are a trio from the UK. Lindsay, their singer, is one of my favorite vocalists of all time. She's a true wonder on this earth. After that, Christ, I don't even know. I'm looking at my phone because I want to cheat. You
Okay,
know, I want to reach over and kind of,
that's fine.
but. I think, you know, when we're talking about tops and stuff like that, this stuff that I always go back to is the album Little Earthquakes by Tori Amos,
Yes.
and some of her later work as well. The song Reindeer King has just been on loop in my head recently. Obviously, Jeff Buckley's Grace, that's a big one that I would press play on basically any day. Like if somebody reminded me of it and it was in my hand, I'd just hit play, like 100%. The other thing that's been sort of like spinning around in my head lately is the album, God, it's the new one. What's it called? Secrets of the Future by a band called Relica from Australia, Reliqa. Again, another female fronted prog metal band and just truly freaking exciting and interesting stuff. And I can't wait to watch them blow up because they're just making really good things. If I said four, I think I've said
Yeah,
four.
yes, so you want me.
What's another classic? I reckon I'm going to go with another Aussie just because let's do it. Let's just be, you know, a patriot. There's a band from Perth called Carnival. I'm sure if you're in the progressive world, you've sort of heard of them. And their album Sound Awake. I don't think that there was a single Australian like musician in the like alternative rock or whatever world that was not deeply influenced by that album. From that era. I remember it hit everyone I knew really hard. So Sound Awake by Carnival as well.
Okay, I love that. So you're coming to, so for the listeners, as Jim mentioned, he's touring around the world and he's coming to South Africa and at the end of August of 2024. So any sneak peeks, any surprises, any things to get us excited for the show?
Well, we are bringing a whole stack of stuff from our new album Charcoal Grace, and some of my favorite songs that we've written of all time, and we have put together a really fun set list, which contains a bunch from the back catalog as well. So if you're like a fan that's been with us for a really long time, there's going to be plenty there as well as the new stuff. So yeah, honestly, I'm just excited to get there and to put my feet on the street and just feel what it's like in your cities and share some music.
Jim, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I would like to say that you're all freaking great. All of you are doing just fine. It's going to be okay. I'm proud of you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.